from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen,
I would not go down that same road again.
We already have 45,000 deaths a year. We have millions of injuries. We don't need to increase that.
I am confident I have not committed perjury and that I will be acquitted after a trial.
This will mean for those patients that they will be able to stave off death at least for a while.
I'm not really Irish by my heritage, but my friend is Irish, so I turned Irish today.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Hi, this is Connie Selica. Right now is a very special time in a teenager's life. You're not a kid anymore. I know it can be tough. You're trying to do the best you can, but sometimes the pressures can get to be too much for you and your friends. That's why I'm asking you, please, don't drink and drive. There are lots of great ways to have a good time. Breaking the law isn't one of them. To make sure you get home safely, please, don't drink at high school parties, after the game, on prom night when everything should be so special, or even at the drive-in on an ordinary Saturday night. Don't drink and drive. It's up to you. When you get behind the wheel, you're risking your life and someone else's. That's a very careless, selfish thing to do. Please don't drink and drive. You can live without it. Remember, it's up to you.
A message from this station and the Educational Institute of the American Hotel and Motel Association.
The great communicator went before the press this Thursday. It was President Reagan's first news conference in over 4 months and one of his most talked about. ABC's Vic Ratner describes how the president fared.
It was hardly the confrontation that some expected. The president seemed back in control, confident. He said virtually nothing new, but never seemed to be stumped by reporters' questions or at a loss for the answers that he wanted to give. He left a lot of questions still unanswered, but handled himself well.
The Iran-Contra affair was the main issue. As in the past, the president said he did not believe he was trading arms for hostages.
The place where I was wrong was in not realizing that once that pressure was put on from the other side, and it did stem from the Iranian representatives, they saw an opportunity, they thought, to start bargaining for more weapons than that more or less token amount that we had agreed to sell, and to put the price at varying numbers of hostages.
Asked if he had the opportunity to do it all again in an effort to save the hostages, the president replied,
I would not go down that same road again. I will keep my eyes open for any opportunity again for improving relations, and we will continue to explore every legitimate means of getting our hostages back.
The president emphatically denied that he was aware that any money went to the Nicaraguan Contras. He was asked if he may have forgotten being told about it.
You would have heard me from without opening the door to the office if I had been told that at any time. No, and I still do not have the answer to that money.
But perhaps the most damaging remark the president made came after the news conference ended. Mr. Reagan said Vice President Bush did not argue against the Iran policy. Vice President Bush, however, has said that he had privately counseled the president against the policy. Chief of Staff Howard Baker assessed the damage.
It was a casual remark. I don't think it was a considered remark, and I don't think Vice President Bush will be damaged by it.
President Reagan later revised his statement. On Friday morning, the president said that Vice President Bush had expressed certain reservations about the Iran policy to key White House officials. There were other important developments in the Iran-Contra affair. ABC's Vic Ratner explains.
The chairman of the Senate and House committees announced they'll begin several months of joint public hearings May 5th. The committees also gave approval to an agreement with independent counsel Lawrence Walsh, which clears the way for giving limited immunity to John Poindexter and Oliver North. Chairman Lee Hamilton of the House committee told us the agreement provides for the lawmakers to start questioning Poindexter first in private early in May, with North to get immunity later on in June. Both men would testify in public sometime in late June. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
This week marked the second anniversary of the captivity of U.S. hostage Terry Anderson. His friends and relatives gathered at the American Baptist Church in Valley Forge. Peggy Say, Anderson's sister, said the former hostages, held with her brother, have been very supportive.
They are there for me every step of the way. And their support, their compassion, their emotional chains to the hostages they left behind are a testament to all of these men that were in captivity and how remarkable they are.
One of those former hostages, Father Lawrence Jenko, reads from a letter he sent Terry Anderson.
In case I never told you, Terry, you are dearly loved by Marty Jenko. Please, dear God, set them free.
In Washington, the news for former White House aide turned lobbyist Michael Deaver was not good. A grand jury returned an indictment against Deaver on 5 counts of perjury and making false statements. ABC's Beverly Lumpkin reports.
The indictment charges that Deaver lied on 2 separate occasions about his contacts with White House officials on behalf of his private clients. Deaver is charged with having lied to a congressional subcommittee and to the grand jury itself about meetings with White House officials on behalf of a variety of clients, including South Korea, Puerto Rico, Canada, TWA, Philip Morris, Rockwell International, and Boeing.
Deaver expressed confidence that the decision would be reversed.
I am confident I have not committed perjury and that I will be acquitted after a trial.
Deaver went on to defend himself.
The indictment alleges that I perjured myself when I testified before Mr. Dingell's subcommittee last May and when I testified before the grand jury in June. I did not. My testimony was truthful and correct on all of these subjects to the best of my recollection and belief. Indeed, I had no reason to lie because I knew I'd done nothing wrong.
The Deaver investigation was prompted by allegations that he had used his ties to the White House to promote his lobbying business. Many gathered at Arlington National Cemetery Saturday for a ceremony honoring the 7 Space Shuttle Challenger astronauts. Assistant Secretary of the Army Robert Dawson spoke.
It's very fitting to do it here at Arlington because the memory of the Challenger astronauts will be forever linked to a long list of explorers and scientists who have been laid to rest in this hallowed ground. Although many laid to rest here were not astronauts, they were all explorers who looked at uncharted territory and stretched the limits of man a little farther.
Vice President Bush also attended the service. The law which limits your driving to 55 miles an hour on our nation's highways has long been a controversial one. Here's Senator Phil Graham of Texas.
If you get in your pickup or your automobile and you start out from Fort Worth to Lubbock driving 55 miles an hour, one of two things is going to happen to you. One, you're going to get discouraged and turn back. Or two, you're going to get run over by somebody else going over 55 miles an hour.
But consumer advocate Joan Claybrook disagrees.
We already have 45,000 deaths a year. We have millions of injuries. We don't need to increase that.
Despite the debate, the Senate passed a bill this week which gives states the green light to raise the speed limit to 65 miles an hour on rural interstates. But the bill is being threatened by a presidential veto. Here's ABC's Bill Greenwood.
Aides say the president will veto the bill, calling its spending level excessive, $10 billion more than requested. The president was said to support language increasing the speed limit on rural interstate highways to 65 miles an hour, but spokesman Marlon Fitzwater said Mr. Reagan can't support numerous pork barrel projects in the measure, like a provision to give federal funds for access to an Ohio amusement park.
Personal income is on the rise. According to the Commerce Department, it's the biggest increase in a year.
It's the best rise in Americans' overall personal income since last April, but part of it came from hefty payments by Uncle Sam to farmers. The figures also show a nice rebound in consumer spending after a deep dive during January. In both cases, new cars called the tune as car makers put back a lot of sales incentives last month that they had temporarily wiped out in January. Americans were saving about 3.5 cents of every income dollar during February. That's not a strong rate, but it's better than around Christmas time when spending was in full swing. Tony Sargent, ABC News at the Commerce Department.
The battle against AIDS took several steps forward this week. First, the Federal Drug Agency approved the drug AZT for AIDS patients. AZT helps to protect against pneumocystis pneumonia, a common killer among AIDS victims. Congressman Henry Wexman explains what this means.
This will mean for those patients that they will be able to stave off death, at least for a while. They'll be permitted to prolong their lives for maybe a couple of years, and hopefully in time for us to develop a cure for AIDS, which will then permit them to stay alive.
In Paris, it's been announced that Dr. Daniel Zagary's research for an AIDS vaccine is progressing very well.
Dr. Zagary has inoculated himself with his vaccine and has found that there were no ill effects, but that at the same time his body has created the antibodies, which he says can counteract the AIDS virus. At the same time, he says that two AIDS victims in Zaire who were inoculated with his vaccine have staged a dramatic recovery in the past 8 months.
But for now, perhaps the most effective weapon against AIDS is education. Speaking at a House subcommittee hearing on the government's efforts to educate people about AIDS, Dr. David Frazier, a member of the National Academy of Sciences Committee on a National Strategy for AIDS, stressed the importance of dispelling some of the false beliefs people have on how the disease is acquired.
Myths about AIDS need to be dispelled so that people who are infected are not treated inhumanely at work or at school by people who think erroneously that they might transmit the virus by such daily activities as shaking hands, sneezing, coughing, or sharing of utensils, or even by embracing or kissing.
In Great Britain, a group of pop stars got together to record the Beatles' hit, Let It Be, for charity. The purpose is to raise money for the families of victims and injured survivors of the Zeebrugge ferry disaster. And among the stars helping out, Boy George and Bananarama. Another British rock star back in the news is David Bowie. He announced a new tour, a commercial deal with Pepsi, and a new album.
A lot of the material that I wrote for this was based around the last 10 years of writing, so it's pretty diversified. But it's probably one of the most energetic albums I've made in a long time.
High-level meetings took place in the Vatican as the Pope prepares for his visit to the U.S. this summer. ABC's David Ensor reports from Rome.
The American church leadership is concerned that unless the Pope's visit to the U.S. in September is handled carefully, it could be very controversial. Archbishop John May of St. Louis, the president of the U.S. Bishops Conference, says the clergy agree with John Paul that America has become too sexually permissive, but that message needs to be, and he sure will be, presented in a way that doesn't alienate people. He says the bishops will warn the Pope of planned demonstrations against him by homosexual and other groups. David Ensor, ABC News, Rome.
The Pope has taken a firm stand against birth control, homosexuality, test tube babies, and women priests. U.S. employers are now facing growing pressure to provide maternity leave for their workers, according to a new conference board report. Only 10 states require employers to grant leave, and most women are not given job guarantees.
The report says there is growing political and economic pressure on companies to do more. 8 in 10 working women are now in their childbearing years. Helen Axel, director of the Conference Board's Work and Family Information Center, says the growing numbers of women at work could force many companies to change their policies.
The sizable number of women working now and the increased visibility of women in management positions makes this issue more visible to senior management.
The report says most working women don't receive job guarantees when they take maternity leave. Richard Davies, ABC News, New York.
On Wall Street this week, Friday was triple witching hour. Alan Sinai of Sherson Lehman Brothers tells us it was a plus for the market.
Not only do we have good fundamentals driving the stock market, but we got through this ticklish time when a lot of investors were concerned that the expiration of all the options and programmed stock settings would cause the market to go down.
The market closed up on Friday almost 34 points and is up 23% this year. Several statistics which reflect how the economy is doing were released. The good news is that home building activity was better in February than at any time in 10 months. The bad news, the nation's total output of goods and services, or the GNP, grew at a very disappointing 1.1% in 1987 so far. Economists say 1% growth is hardly the rate the U.S. needs to create jobs. ABC's Tony Sargent explains.
This is the clearest look so far at how the economy was growing as it headed into 1987. The disappointing 1% pace is slower than government analysts guesstimated in January and February before they had quite all the figures in hand. 1% growth is hardly one-third the rate most economists believe we need to create worthwhile jobs.
The latest figures show the economy grew just over 2% last year.
You have to understand that we've met with Bolivians, we've met with Peruvians, and they are telling us that it's America's demand that is causing the explosion of coca leaves plantations throughout South America.
That's Congressman Charles Rangel, who urged the president this week to attend a drug summit with South American nations. Rangel's call for increased efforts to solve the drug problem was made more dramatic by a report on drug trafficking issued by the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment. ABC's John Bascom explains.
Uncle Sam has doubled spending over the last 5 years to stop drugs at the border, but it hasn't done much good, says the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment. In the same period that federal spending has doubled, so has the importation of cocaine. Smugglers' profits have hit new highs, estimated at $7 billion year before last. One problem's a lack of coordination, with federal drug agencies having fragmented and overlapping responsibilities. Also, a serious lack of support for emerging new technologies that might stop the smugglers cold. The Defense Department could help there. John Bascom, ABC News, Washington.
Teachers in Long Island are suing over a request that they be tested for drugs. ABC's Mike Von Fremd says that the U.S. government is supporting the drug test.
While the federal government is not ordering it, the Justice Department, under the direction of Attorney General Edward Meese, is letting school districts across the country know in very strong terms that the Reagan administration favors drug testing for teachers. It concerns a test case in Long Island, where teachers sued when they were asked to take the test. The Justice Department has filed a friend of the court brief in the case, stating that it feels that because teachers are such an important role model, they should be tested, just as are airline pilots, FBI agents, and others. Mike Von Fremd, ABC News, Atlanta.
Reaction to Attorney General Meese's support of drug testing for teachers came from Bella Rosenberg, a spokesperson for the American Federation of Teachers.
Teachers should not be subjected to that just because they're an easy target, because they're visible, they're public employees, they all work in one institution, just to make a point. I think this is politics. I don't think this is a solution to the drug problem in society.
If you've ever flown, you've probably experienced a flight delay. The FAA and the Department of Transportation are looking for a solution. Here's ABC's Vic Ratner.
The government called representatives of more than 40 airlines to this meeting here in Washington, asking them to spread out their flight schedules in Atlanta, Chicago, and elsewhere to avoid the delays that result when too many flights are scheduled at the same time. But the airlines claim they're not to blame. They say the government has been too stingy with money to hire enough air traffic controllers and modernize the airways system so that it can handle the load. Whatever the reason, flight delays were up 20% last year over 1985, and most airline industry experts believe they'll be even worse this year. Vic Ratner, ABC News, Washington.
Bob Stevenson, a spokesman for Delta, has a few suggestions on how the government could help.
Improved automation, computerization, improved instrumentation, additional air traffic controllers, just to name a few.
The Senate took the suggestion of President Reagan and approved the more aid to the Contras.
The Senate stamped its approval on more aid to the Contras. It's for the second installment of money voted last year. The first package was for $60 million. Today's action involved another $40 million. The key Senate vote was 52-48 for the second payment. Right after the vote, though, Senate Democratic Leader Robert Byrd said this was not a victory for the Reagan administration's course of action in Central America. It is, he said, an alarm bell, and the public has grave reservations about this. These comments portend stronger opposition in the fall when the Reagan administration seeks $105 million more in aid to the Contras. Herbert Kaplow, ABC News at the Capitol.
Republican Senator Richard Lugar explains why this aid package is so important.
The reason we're supporting the Contras is that we're worried about Soviet bases in Nicaragua, and if the Contras are not offering pressure, we think the Soviets are more likely to come in there.
Legislation was introduced in both the House and the Senate to revise the welfare program, in particular the part known as Aid for Dependent Children. The bill would emphasize education, training, and work. Congressman Jim Wright explains.
We'll assure that people on welfare have opportunities for training and remedial education.
There'll be sanctions against recipients who fail to cooperate with employability efforts, and a financial incentive for those who do cooperate.
The President's Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, was in Madrid conducting talks with heads of the Spanish government. ABC's Marta Williams says his discussions about American military bases in Spain made little or no progress.
Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger has spent 2 days in Spain in talks with Spanish King Juan Carlos and the Prime Minister, Felipe González. The basic theme of those talks has been the U.S. military presence in Spain. The Spaniards want the U.S. forces out of their country, especially the 401st Tactical Wing of the U.S. Air Force. But the U.S. considers this wing vital and irreplaceable for the safety of NATO and of Europe. Although talks were cordial, negotiations continue at a stalemate.
On the Emerald Isle, it was fun and frolic as the Irish celebrated their patron saint. ABC's Sean Kenny reports from Dublin it was a festival to make any American proud.
Celebrating St. Patrick's Day with razzmatazz and spectacular parades is something the Irish in Ireland have learned well from the Irish in America. Over 100 acts took part, with bands from as far away as Switzerland and California. Marching groups joined in from all over the United States. And afterwards, to refresh the hundreds of thousands who turned out to watch, some Irish bars have been serving green drinks, taking another leaf out of the American book. Shane Kenny, ABC News, Dublin.
Across the Atlantic in America, the celebration was no less intense. Over 1 million watched New York's traditional St. Patrick's Day parade. And in Chicago, as always, they dyed the Chicago River green. How did Chicagoans enjoy the holiday?
It's a great occasion. I've never been to Chicago before. This is great.
I'm not really Irish by my heritage, but my friend is Irish, so I turned Irish today.
And our country's highest-ranking official and Irishman had these words.
The blessed St. Patrick, we're told, died on this day in the year of our Lord, 461. And leave it to the Irish to be carrying on a wake for 1,500 years.
When we come back, Eddie Murphy, Hollywood's glib and irreverent funny man, in a bit of a legal bind.
Oh, boy.
What's the matter?
Wow, do I need help with my taxes?
You do. Well, let's see if we can help.
We? Who's we?
The Internal Revenue Service.
You must be kidding.
No, let's see. Do you have problems with English?
What do you mean?
Well, volunteers help non-English-speaking people right in their own neighborhoods. That's called VITA.
It doesn't help me.
Too bad. There are similar volunteer programs for the elderly, too, TCE, but you're not 60 or older. Handicapped?
Nope.
You're a tough one. Low income.
Negative.
Love a challenge. But I think I've got you. Can you see, hear, or dial a telephone?
All of the above.
Great. You can call the IRS for teletax, recorded tax information, or for information about community outreach. That's IRS tax counseling for groups. Or you can write for over 90 free IRS publications using that blank in your tax package. What do you think of that?
Wow. Do I need help with my taxes? And I'm gonna get it.
Part of the service. Free taxpayer assistance from the IRS.
And from the Eat Your Words department, here's Eddie Murphy on Tuesday.
The reason I won't settle is because it's principle. And I've spent more money in legal fees than it would cost me to settle out of court.
Eddie Murphy took the stand and testified in a $30 million suit brought against him by Irving King Broder. Broder claims breach of contract, that he was Murphy's agent, and is owed a percentage of the millions Murphy has earned since 1980. So what was Murphy saying on Thursday after several days of testimony?
We came to a very reasonable agreement.
What was it?
Can you tell us what it was? No, I can't. But I still got a couple of bucks left.
And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was engineered by Cy Kantrowitz, Tom Kennedy, and Dennis Meehan. Production assistant by Mike Mancuso. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.